It was the year of fans.
The year of engagement.
The year we had great conversation.
It was the year of reruns.
The year JP joined us.
The year of moves.
And the year of joy.
It was the news show.
It was the end of bloopers.
It was the year everything connected.
The year is 2018. The Place, the Babylon Project podcast.
Hello, Babylon 5 fans. Welcome to our next episode of the Babylon Project podcast. I am Raul Wybera, and as always, I am joined by my good friends Jim Arrowood and JP Harvey. How are you tonight, gentlemen?
Awesome.
Doing great.
Has it been a long day for y'all? Gonna be a long night.
Yes, yep. It is.
So, Jim, what episode are we talking about tonight?
We're talking about Die Längste Nacht. No, I'm sorry. We're not German. The Long Night.
So I think we might have some listeners who are.
Well, yeah, I know a little German. He lives right down the street from me.
So, this is, gosh, it's only episode 5 of season 4.
Yeah.
Seems like a lot has happened.
It's been densely packed. Now, I know in later parts of the season, Straczynski kind of compresses stuff in because he wasn't 100% certain he would have a season 5. But even here this early, it's still just very dense story. And it is moving.
Yeah, we're leading up to one of those early part of the season climaxes where lots mm-hmm. of stuff is going to happen and lots of boom. And
yeah. In some ways, this is just a setup episode.
Yeah.
But what we're doing for a setup episode here could almost be resolution or a mid-season finale by today's standard.
Yeah. You know, there is definitely some things happening that are, oh, yeah. It's going to be a good one.
Yep. Well, why don't you go ahead and give us a feeling of what we're going to be talking about tonight?
Very well.
Archive. Access. Initiated.
Emperor Cartaja has gone to the Narn homeworld and has taken Londo with him. It is his intention to put Jakar through a show trial and then have him executed. Londo has managed to recruit other high officials to go along with his plan to assassinate Cartaja and to free Narn per his promise to Jakar. Londo has paid bribes to have the chains on Jakar's yoke weakened. Thus, when Jakar breaks the weakened chains, the assassination attempt is to begin. Londo is to take Cartaja aside and stab the Emperor with a syringe that contains an undetectable neurotoxin. Londo's plan begins to unravel when Cartaja tells him that he had Jakar's chains replaced because they looked weak. However, Jakar manages to break the chains anyway, and Londo leads Cartaja into a hallway, but just as he is about to inject the poison, Cartaja causes Londo to drop the syringe. It is recovered by Vir, who happens along at the right time, and he stabs Cartaja, who collapses. In the aftermath, Londo is appointed Prime Minister and takes the opportunity to recommend that the Centauri leave the Narn homeworld forever and return home to take care of the shadow problem before the Vorlons arrive in 3 days. Sheridan continues to make plans to strike the Vorlons, but he learns that the Shadows have begun using a powerful weapon similar to the Vorlon Planet Killer. The Shadow weapon fires missiles at a planet, and those missiles burrow into the planet, causing the crust to crack and, in essence, turn the planet inside out. Sheridan hatches a new plan to bring the Vorlons and the Shadows face-to-face at Coriana 6. He orders the commander of White Star 14, a ranger named Erickson, to sacrifice his ship and crew to deliver false information to the Shadows that will send them to Coriana 6, causing a three-way battle. Following the Centauri withdrawal from the Narn homeworld, the citizens celebrate what they see as a victory over the Centauri. Some are calling for a strike against Centauri Prime. Jakar is bewildered by his people wanting to start the entire conflict all over again. Well, there it is.
There it is.
Yep.
A big there.
Yep.
Like I said, this is just sort of a setup episode, but there's a lot of there.
Well, and there is one thread that comes to a conclusion, but, you know, we'll get into that.
Mm-hmm.
Character files opened.
Well, guest cast, what do we have? Who? Man, that's not a what do we have. It's a who do we have?
Who do we have? Well, we have Bryan Cranston, who is Erickson, and this is his only appearance on Babylon 5. He's got a very long list of credits going all the way back to 1968, including some gems like Amazon Women on the Moon in 1987, Dead Space in 1991, From Earth to the Moon, a TV miniseries in 1998, and he played Buzz Aldrin in that. You know, it's funny, I remember that.
From Earth to the Moon?
Yes.
That was a good miniseries.
That was a great, great miniseries.
It was.
My wife got that for me for Christmas, actually, years ago.
And let's see, we got an episode of X-Files in 1998. He did an appearance in Third Rock from the Sun in 1999. And, of course, one of the probably his most popular role was in Breaking Bad from 2008 to 2013.
Was that a major role? Or I've never watched Breaking Bad. That's why I ask.
He was the star.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. At least I've never watched it either. So, but I do know that he was the star of the show. And then last year, 2017, Philip K. Dick's Electric Dreams, which is, well, I'm not sure how to watch that. that's a Wayne Henderson thing. He really likes that. He does a podcast about that show.
Does he?
I think it's up on Amazon, but I haven't had a chance to watch it because I've been advised it is not kid friendly.
I have not had a chance to watch it yet, but I it's in my backlog.
And we also had Wortham Krimmer returning as Emperor Cartasia for his last of five appearances on this show. So there's a hint about the closure I said we would be getting.
Okay. By the way, our intrepid producer behind us kicked us a little message. Troy said, don't forget to mention that they mentioned Babylon 5 on Breaking Bad as a homage with Bryan Cranston.
Oh, well, see, as I've never seen the show, I wouldn't have known that.
No, same.
but I people keep telling me, you got to watch this. You got to watch this. And it's like, you know, yeah. There's only so many hours in a day.
I've heard that one as well. And it's kind of in a full stretch of, what is it, five or six seasons?
Yeah, something like that. It's going to have to wait for me until at least until after retirement.
I'll consider myself lucky if I ever get to retire.
Initiating plot Analysis.
Okay, long night. Yeah, and it's going to be one here. The beginnings have their endings, but the endings are beginnings, I guess, is kind of how things are going to be on this this episode of the show. Babylon 5 is almost ready to strike. As I've said before, that is a lot of ships out there.
Yeah, heck of a traffic pattern. I wonder who's in charge of that.
Yeah, and we find out that the Shadows have been taking a bit of a hint from the Vorlons. It seems that there is something, I guess, that could be best described as a giant shadow cloud of death.
Yeah. It appears on the screen, and it looks like the surface of the planet is moving, and Sheridan looks at that, and he can't figure out what it is.
No. So that's going to be one of their first big tasks.
Ivanova says, ending this thing is like getting in between two giants fighting on the playground.
Pretty much, too. I guess the second part of the setup, you know, and it's really just the two, we've only got the two stories this time. Nice, sweet, not lots and lots of jump around either. But the second story setup, it looks like Londo actually has some allies. He's not completely alone in this, except in some ways he is kind of very much alone in it. And we are at the stage right now, as he puts it very bluntly, either Cartagia is dead or Centauri Prime is destroyed. So they're there on Arn and everything's ready.
Yeah.
I like the line there where one of the guys at the table says, "Don't blame us for this, Malari," because he's heard that before, you know.
Right.
Maybe not those exact words, but close. You know, "Well, there's a madman on the throne." Well, if there is, you put him there.
You put him there.
So, man, poor.
Yeah, well.
He can't get away from that burden. Everybody reminds him.
Yeah, well, see, they're actually blaming Londo because of Reefa's role in this.
Right.
So apparently nobody knows back on Centauri Prime that it was Londo that arranged to have Reefa dispatched.
No. So his little plot there seems to have worked quite well.
Well, at any rate, things have become urgent.
Yeah.
Very much so.
In both storylines, actually.
Right. Well, yeah, they have one day to act as far as the Centauri side of the plot is concerning, and basically they're ready to move with the Army of Light side of the plot, which takes us to John having a very frank heart-to-heart talk with Susan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they've got the largest fleet ever assembled, but going up against the full might of the Vorlons and the Shadows. He's sending Lori in with her to go out and try and find some of the last remaining first ones. She's not happy about that at all.
No, she wants to be there at the end, when the big fight goes down.
Right, right. And the discussion of her mother's suicide was just absolutely heartbreaking.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end, she extracts a soldier's promise, not as a friend, not as a CEO, but as one soldier to another, that she will be there for the final battle.
Mm-hmm.
And well, you know what?
I was going to say, you know, it seemed like the mood in the room was very subdued and almost final.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It was ominous, that promise.
Well, it's pretty clear neither of them expect to survive
the
fight. Mm. So.
And of course, in a battle like this, there would be no guarantees.
No. Well, what you're going up against, the surprise would be to survive almost.
I guess.
All right. We're going to be... It looks like Centauri Prime, but it's Narn. We're going to be on Narn for a bit now, which is sort of a shift to how a lot of the episodes have been running of late, where you're hopscotching all over the place. The Narn throne room, there's, what shall we say, some play going on?
Yeah, some goofy party kind of stuff.
Yeah. But in the course of it all, Cartesia decides Londo really gets it, so he's going to make him his high priest and keep him by his side.
I'll bet Londo is just absolutely beside himself for that.
Oh. Did you pick those words on purpose? I'm just thinking beside himself, the jester shadowing Cartesia, doing the little imitations.
Yeah. Exaggerated on top of it. And then that cold laser beam stare from Cartesia back
when
at the court jester. Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, if you figure he's dead right there, and then they break out laughing, and the court jester is laughing, and
relief.
For
now, I don't know if I'd want the job.
Very brief, temporary relief.
You're scared to be scared if you're the jester,
right?
And then you're scared to be relieved that maybe you shouldn't be scared, which is scary.
Don't they say comedy's a killer business?
That poor guy.
Yeah.
I'm sure he was highly qualified for the position, though.
His imitation was good.
Uh-huh.
Oh. Londo, apparently, this would actually surprise me. He just found out about Jakar's eye.
Yeah.
So he, even though he's in the inner circle, as it were, it seems he's still left out a lot of some of the things going on.
Yeah, there was nobody really there when Cartago ordered Jakar's eye plucked out. Just a couple of guards and some guy holding that bowl to wash his hands in.
Yep.
So there really wasn't anybody around. So.
And to him, it's not a big deal. So it's not like I couldn't imagine him going off then and saying, "Hey, Londo, guess what I just did?" It was such a meaningless.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thing for him to do. He probably did it and forgot about it. Yep.
Good point.
We know that the Narn do not look at, or excuse me, the Centauri do not look at the Narn as sentient beings. They're a subspecies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, what's interesting, when Londo left to go to Jakar, he described it as, to the Emperor, is he has to go take care of some arrangements, I think was how he phrased
something
it.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Jim, go ahead and play back what some of those arrangements are.
Okay.
Jakar. Cartesia.
My eye offended him. Doesn't matter. I can see things now that were invisible to me before. An empty eye sees through to an empty heart.
Your execution has been set for later today. Cartago will parade you before your people, humiliate you, use you to strip away their last hope, and then he will kill you. At least that is the plan. My people are in place. Your chains have been weakened, the palace guards primed. His personal guards cannot be bribed. That is where you come in. You need only to distract them for a few moments. We will take care of things from there. Can you do it?
Your heart is empty, Molari. Did you know that?
I know that your heart will be dead soon if you do not act as I have instructed you. Shikar, remember, do not harm him. If you touch him, your people will suffer and never be set free. Leave him to us.
The chains weaken, so his main role is to be a distraction.
Yeah.
And, well, makes sense because basically Cartesia is Centauri's problem. So the Centauri have to take care of Cartesia.
Right. Yeah, the Jakar can't do that.
Right.
You know, Londo, make sure to warn him, stay clear. Whatever you do, just you know your role and do what you're supposed to do. And
give us the opportunity.
We need to take care of the rest.
Mm-hmm. And we cut from here to what I suppose is one of the lighter moments of the episode.
Well, it depends on your point of view.
Did any of you gentlemen ever watch the television series Dinosaurs?
No.
Oh, so if I said we need another jester, it would go over flat. scientist constantly blowing up the kid and his experiments. The punchline for it always was him sort of breaking the fourth wall and saying, we need another Timmy.
Oh.
We'll just leave it with what Cartesia said. Humor is such a subjective thing.
As he tosses the jester's hat to Londo.
Uh-huh. And they drag away the body.
I'm seriously surprised the head wasn't still in it.
Yeah. Cartesia has this thing about collecting heads, doesn't he?
Yeah, I think so.
On that somber note, the rest of Londo's arrangements are put in place.
Yeah, we get the details of the plan now.
Yep. And I guess there's some lighter moments more with Veer and Londo as they're going over this. Nervous jokes don't always work.
Hey, lighter is such a subjective thing.
Yeah.
Well, it starts out, you know, as a joke and kidding back and forth. Oh, well, let's play this first.
Go for it.
Yes. You have it? God, there wasn't a problem you weren't seeing.
I don't think so. I kept checking, but as far as I can tell, nobody was even trying to follow me.
It's... That is why I sent you. Everyone knows that you are incapable of doing anything really dangerous or subversive.
Oh, that's good. I don't know about incapable.
They always overwrap these things. You have to be a magician to open it.
I mean, you know, if I put my mind to it, I mean, I suppose. I mean, it's just that, you know, once I did take a...
Yeah. Take the compliment for what it is, hmm? Very nice. Good workmanship. To give you any instructions?
Yes. The dose of neurotoxins is very small, completely undetectable. Okay. But because it is so small, it has to be delivered directly into the target. Okay. You couldn't just put it in his food. It wouldn't work.
It wouldn't get past his tasters anyway. Go on.
You must place it right here, between his heart, and then press that button. The toxin will paralyze his neural system, which will cause his hearts to stop. And then when you pull it out, an organic sealant will cover up the wound, and you won't be able to see it unless you knew what you were looking for, and we hope that they won't be.
How fast does the poison work?
Very quickly, he said, almost instantaneously.
Almost?
How fast is almost? Time enough for him to stagger back into the main room and cry out, Londo killed me. Hmm? Or maybe just enough time for him to say, Londo killed.
And then he won't even get that out. I mean, he'll just maybe go, Lon. Or maybe he'll just be totally delirious and say everything backwards and say, kill Londo. I was just making a play on the...
Well, it's time. They're going to parade Chicago before the leaders of some local towns to encourage cooperation, yes? We must be there.
Humor is such a subjective thing.
Wow.
Kind of goes on the theory that all humor is based on the misfortune of someone.
Right. Or the other way I hear that stated is everything is funny when it happens to someone else. Hey, remember Veer's offense, I guess, in this scene. You know, he's you're incapable of doing bad things, right? And Veer, yes. You know, kind of, he said he misses the compliment and gets a little insulted. He really wants to be, I can be a bad guy. If I put my mind to it, I can do, you know, I'm
not so much bad guy, but hard.
Right. You know,
ruthless, do what's necessary.
Well, as we know, he's going to get his chance to show that.
Right. And remember how much he wants to be that guy before right. Maybe he needs to be that guy.
Uh-huh. And we will be getting back to this discussion, yeah. Definitely. Okay, we have Jakar's Via de la Rosa, unmistakably mm-hmm. what that is, down to the crossbeam.
Right.
A lot of sound out of a little drum. I guess the sound man in me kind of picked up that one real...
It's good acoustics.
Right.
Oh, there wasn't any room for a big drum, so.
Yeah.
It's probably an electronic, it's a MIDI drum is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely a interesting turn of events here.
Oh, lots of turn of events.
Well, we've had Cartesia for 5 episodes, and we have Jakar, and Londo's stuck in the middle here, and it just almost, well, even more than almost, feels like the a passion play.
Mm-hmm. Very much so.
I mean, every episode, you know, here is...
The whipping.
The whipping, before. losing the eye, you know.
He's had the crown of thorns.
All these things, yeah.
Uh-huh. This was the Via Dolorosa for it.
Yeah, and he's supposed to be crucified, at least figuratively speaking.
Uh-huh. Yeah, because, well... They read the charges, or at least the Emperor reads the charges, and it's death by vivisection, which is what Londo had warned him of earlier.
Yeah.
And Cartesia leans over to Londo, and, well, damn, they changed the chains. The Emperor thought they looked a little weak.
Yeah.
And the look on Londo's face, I mean... If he could have turned green, he couldn't have looked more sick.
Well, the plan is apparently unraveling at this point.
Yep, except that does not seem to stop Jakar. Basically, when he was asked, how does he plead? Don't honk off Anarn.
Yep.
Because, yeah, he still... breaks the chains, and he goes completely enraged. And Londo does what would in any normal case appear to be exactly the right thing. He gets the Emperor out of there, supposedly to safety. And then his composure kind of breaks. Snaps at Cartesia pretty much like, well, the spoiled brat that he is, except that spoiled brat is the Emperor, and Cartesia completely turns on Londo at this point.
This is the second time that's happened, right? Remember when they first talked, I guess, you know, back however many episodes that was, and Londo got very familiar with him and presumed to tell him things, and
what
and Cartesia put him against the wall, right? And here again is that Cartesia.
Yep. Things are going downhill very fast at this point.
Well, the guy's a nut. You don't know what he's going to do from one moment to the next, because there's, you know, he's just not consistent in his behavior other than being stark raving.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But the plan is saved.
Yeah. Well, you know, the syringe is knocked out of Londo's hand.
Right.
And
it goes flying.
Yeah.
And the Emperor spins around directly in the face of Veer.
Yep. Who happened to be ready. And now he is the bad guy.
Or the good guy.
And to his credit, he seemed ready. There. Mm-hmm. He didn't stand there dazed at what he had postured himself to do. Cartesia turns around and Veer takes care of business.
Yeah.
Now, at the time of the original airing, there was a lot of discussion. Did Veer do this intentionally? Was he just trying to get the thing go back? What was it, accidental? And Straczynski actually answered that directly, and I'll go ahead and read what he says. Nothing about it was at all accidental. He had to go pick it up, turn, move to Cartesia, stick it in, and then pull the trigger. Nothing was accidental about it. But if we'd shown him doing all the prep, the shock would not have been as substantial.
Hmm.
So, yeah.
He probably knows, so.
Yep.
Since he wrote it.
Yeah.
And the call goes out, the Emperor's hearts have given out.
Yep.
Now, this whole piece kind of wraps up Londo convincing the Centauri that it's a sign from the gods to leave Narn forever. So he keeps his word to Jakar. And, surprise, he is made prime minister.
Yeah, he really looked like he wanted that.
Yeah.
Well, he focuses his guys on the problem that they were all agreeing was a problem anyway, which is there's nothing to be gained here.
Right.
There's plenty to do at home. And then what did he say? The Emperor's misdeeds or something, or misjudgments,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
The misjudgments.
Something like
about the shadow vessels. And, you know, that's all it took, I think, for those guys to go, and you're going to be the prime minister. You've got the plan. Let's go.
And you know.
Yeah, he put that very delicately.
And this kind of segues into, or actually it reflects back to something Jim had said about this wrapping up a thread. But you've still got the shadows on Centauri, so is it really a wrap-up quite yet?
Well, we at least have somebody in charge of the Centauri people that did not invite the shadows to come to the planet and was condoning them coming to the planet and was looking forward to the conflagration that was to follow.
Right. So we've still got a little bit more to go with the story, but yeah, you're right. The Cartesia role itself. Yeah.
We've dumped one can of worms and we're opening a whole new one.
So now we've got the denouement to get through.
And the guy that's going to start to affect the removal or try it is the guy who just a little bit back was saying we need to have the shadows leave. And was it Morden says to him, as our emissary or our representative, right? As our representative, you'll do as you're told. Or what? Okay, let's see.
We'll see about that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and considering that Londo was the one ultimately who caused all this, it's only appropriate that it's fitting that he would be the one who ends it.
Mm-hmm.
But just remember, this is Babylon 5. What we've already learned is that your actions have consequences.
Yeah, and endings are actually beginnings.
Yep, exactly. Oh, so that really pretty much wraps up, except until we get to the until we get the final scene where everything closes up. We're going to be dealing with the Babylon 5 part of the story now, pretty much the way you had it split.
Mm-hmm.
So going back to Babylon 5, and if this piece was hard and dark and troubling, it's about to get even more so here. The Vorlons have been attacking, we find both the Vorlons and the Shadows have been attacking colonies. And at least at this point, the claim has been that it's just colony worlds. Well, except for the ones heading for Centauri, I guess. And they're still trying to find out what is happening. And we finally get a report from one of the White Stars. White Star 14 is actually on site watching what the Shadows are doing. And basically, the cloud engulfs the planet and missiles drop. They burrow their way into the planet's core and they blow the planet up from the inside out, basically.
Uh-huh. Well, that's even more sinister than the mass drivers that the Centauri used on Narn.
Yeah. The problem is finding out where the Vorlons will strike next. And there's just this little running sight gag during this thing of Lanier trying to get a word in edgewise. And it turns out he's trying to tell them, we know where they're going to strike next. Sector 70 by 12 by 5, Coriana 6.
Yeah.
Which apparently is also a very highly populated world.
6 billion, didn't they say?
I thought that was.
Yeah, I thought that's what they said.
And Sheridan has a plan. And you know what? I was wrong. We do hop back to Narn for just a bit because we find Londo looking for Veer.
And finds him.
Stone drunk.
Yeah, 3 sheets to the wind.
Yeah, he is not handling killing the Emperor very well.
So he carried out this little deed. JMS tells us it wasn't an accident, and Veer is, in retrospect, almost looking like he regrets what he had done.
The way he described it was all he ever wanted was a good job and a nice girl. And Londo puts it in perspective. I don't think he's overstating it, that Veer's a hero. He's the real hero of this.
Mm-hmm.
The bit about taking a Veer's innocence being Londo's greatest crime. You know, has he?
That's certainly a way to look at it. I think you could argue, too, it was time for Veer to grow up. Veer was allowed to remain in relative innocence and be around all of the things that were going on, even to the point that, you know, flashback to the scene just a bit ago. Well, you know, you're incapable. Not necessarily meant literally, but nobody will follow Veer because, and Veer almost became offended at that. Well, lo and behold, he is capable, and he became the bad guy, right? Or the good guy. And instantly
But has he really lost his innocence?
I don't.
Well, hang on. Wasn't Londo's actual words that what were more like to the effect of no one will believe that you are capable?
Something like that. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
So, which leaves the door open to perhaps Londo knowing that Veer is capable.
Right. And that tracks with the accept the compliment for what it is kind of thing. But Veer, the biggest doubter in the room was probably Veer himself, even though he was adamant to point out, hey, I'm capable. Yes, sir, you were. And you are, and then you showed everybody that you're capable.
But you had started to answer my question as far as his innocence. Did Londo really take it?
I don't No. I don't think so.
No, because as we recall from last episode, Veer had made up his own mind that, yes, Cartesia needed to be out of the picture. He needed to be gotten rid of. Veer came to that conclusion on his own based on what Londo had told him.
Yeah. And it's not even that. I would even take it a step further that it's not even that Veer, not only did Londo not take Veer's innocence, but Veer hasn't given up his innocence. There was too much righteousness in what he did and how he did right. it.
But he had never done that or something like that before.
Mm-hmm.
So the time had come, and you know, when I said it was time for Veer to grow up, that's what yeah. I'm referring to. Is not only did he grow up in the sense that he did an adult thing or a big thing or a serious thing, a bad thing, however you want to paint the picture. What he did was one of the mm-hmm. most strategic things. It was huge. It was
mm-hmm. yeah.
Emperor like.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it wasn't. That was a big thing, not a little big thing that he did, and I think right. he shocked himself. But he was ready. There was no hesitation.
Right.
He came in. We don't see it. He picks up the syringe. He puts himself in the right position. Cartesia turns around, and Veer takes care of business. Wow.
He acts.
He shocked mm-hmm. himself, and so he drinks. And Malari says, "You're drunk," and he says, "Oh, you betcha."
Or whatever. Yep.
Okay, now.
But they still have. Yes.
What do y'all think about this? Okay, think back to last season when Jakar and Veer were standing in the elevator and Jakar cut his hand and says, "How do you apologize Ooh. To the dead, dead, dead?" Do you think now Veer has atoned?
Hmm. Yeah.
I think he's gone a long way towards it. He's atoned for as much as it's his part to provide any sort of atonement. I think there's other areas. I think there's others that have a role in atonement to come.
Well, Veer was the vehicle. Veer was the vehicle by which Londo was able to propose leaving Narn forever.
Mm-hmm. Indeed.
And to my knowledge, it won't be Veer won't be acknowledged for his part in that.
I think Veer's happier that way.
Could be.
And yet, they still have to save Centauri Prime.
Yep, big job.
You know, as Veer said, what was any of it for? No, that's what it's for.
Mm-hmm.
So now we are back on Babylon 5 after this interlude. The war room is crowded. It is full of the fleet commanders.
Yeah, all different races.
Yep. And Sheridan has plans to stop the Vorlons.
Mm-hmm.
He is going to send a third of the fleet to slow them down, and he's going to be ready for them. You know, an interesting parallel here, actually, as I put it in the notes, the Battle of the Line around Coriana 6. I mean, this is the younger race's equivalent to the Battle of the Line from the Earth-Mimbari
mm-hmm.
War.
Mm-hmm.
But that's only part of the plan. Sheridan is going to lure the Shadows there, too. And he is going to force a direct confrontation between the Shadows and the Vorlons, because ultimately, that seems to be what's happening. Those two are using surrogates to fight their battles. And at this point, it's become them fighting each other's surrogates.
Yeah.
So he's going to put them nose to nose.
He might as well, you know, they need to confront each other anyway. And, you know, they're killing off billions of people.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, all these people that are dying, and not to mention the people of Babylon 5 and all the non-aligned worlds, they don't want no part of this.
Yeah.
Well, they see themselves for what they are. They're pawns.
Mm-hmm.
And they've gotten tired of it, and something needs to be done.
Right. And part of what he's going to be doing is he's going to use the White Star 14, who found out what was going on. Their role is to hurt the shadows and then lure them to Coriana 6.
Yeah, so we have...
That clip. We're not going to say anything about it and just let it play, right?
Yeah, you have Sheridan prefacing it by saying, I may be asking a great deal of you.
Yep.
Erickson, a little while ago, I said that I might be asking a great deal of you and your crew. I've just sent 4 more ships to rendezvous with your position. Once they arrive, you will proceed to enter Shadow Space. Your target is a small base on Dorax 7.
I know the one, sir. But, Captain, it's only 10 light minutes from one of their main staging areas. They'd be able to counterattack almost instantly.
We're aware of that. We're transmitting a file to you on a sub-channel. That file contains information about a secret base we've established near Coriana 6. Most of the fleet will be there when it goes online in 3 days. But, Erickson, if this information falls into the hands of the Shadows, they will launch an attack against that base just before it becomes operational.
Don't worry, sir. We won't let it fall into the wrong hands.
You misunderstand me. We want it to fall into their hands. We want them in the Coriana system in 3 days. We're planning a little party for them. But Erickson, if this information comes too easily, they won't believe it. We need them to believe it's real. Real enough to fight for, real enough to... You're not a married man, are you, Erickson?
No. No, sir, I'm not.
Well, there's that at least.
What about the other 4 ships?
They won't have anything of value. You'll provide cover, allowing them to escape. Your ship has the only copy of this file. Erickson, billions of lives are counting on this. If there were any other way...
Understood. We'll put up a good fight.
If there's anything that you or your crew need, anyone you want us to get a hold of...
They're Minbari, Captain. They knew what they were signing on for. So did I. We finished receiving the file. Captain, how long before the other ships get here?
10, maybe 12 hours.
Then we better get ready. You can count on us, sir. We'll get it done.
I know you will.
Isil za veni, Delen. In Valen's name.
You know, that even just listening without the visual almost has me to tears.
Well, you know, one of the things that added to the scene for me was all of the other commanders standing behind Sheridan, and even with all their makeup on and everything, the looks on their faces, like he knew. Everybody knew what Sheridan was going to ask Erickson to do.
Mm-hmm.
And Erickson was like, you know, and all of a sudden here comes Sheridan. He's starting to get a little sappy, you know. He says, well, if there was any other way, and Erickson's like, look, you gave me the orders. Give me what I need and let me go do this. Because he didn't, you know, you're asking somebody to go die.
It's a suicide mission.
Exactly. And, you know, you don't want any sentiment or anything. You just want to know what you need to do. Let me go.
And you're right. The other captains are very rattled by it.
Yeah. And then when the scene's over and they sign off, they all just kind of wander away in different directions. Nobody says anything.
Yeah. Well, what do you say? You think, I'm glad I'm not that guy.
Yeah. And at least for once, in, at least in the series, you don't have the League of Non-Aligned Worlds arguing with each other or arguing with Sheridan or arguing with somebody else.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Everyone understands who is leading them now.
Mm.
And there's no mistaking that. And at least the people in the room with him are all military people as well. And like JP said, it's very possible that he could ask the same thing of them. In fact, going to Coriana 6 as the fighting force, he pretty much darn near is asking that of some of them.
Oh, yeah, but he'll be right up front.
With them.
Yes.
Yeah, the folks going to Coriana 6 are being asked to be willing to die, mm-hmm. but the plan isn't to die, right? Kind of like Patton. You know, the plan is to make the other guy die. But
yeah.
But White Star 14, the plan is that you will die.
Yeah.
And it can't be given up too easily. There's got to be a fight, even a fight to the... It's like, well, you know, your orders are to go die and make it convincing.
Mm.
And Straczynski actually based this on real history because, you know, you mentioned Patton. World War II, false information was leaked to our men to convince the Germans that we weren't going to land at Normandy.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, it was sending them to their deaths intentionally. Though I think in that case, they didn't know that they were being given false information.
Right.
So.
Well, we switch scenes again.
Yep.
And the Narns are ripping the throne room, the temporary throne room, to shreds.
Yeah. Bit of a celebration.
Yeah. Oh, it seems kind of juvenile, though. You know, I don't know. Smashing the furniture, blah, 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 whatever.
Yeah. And, well, Jakar steps in and puts a stop to it in no uncertain terms. And they try to put him in charge, and he absolutely will not be their leader. And not only that, he will not allow the war to continue.
No. He says, I didn't dethrone one dictator just to become one myself.
Yep.
Uh-huh. He breaks the cycle.
Yes.
You know, and I picked those words specifically because that was almost what Turhan had said back in, I guess, season two. Was it season two? Yeah. Sheridan's first season. Turhan had made the comment about someone has to break the cycle.
Yeah.
So now it's going to be Jakar.
Would you ever have thought it would be Jakar? Back in season one and season two.
Oh, yeah. Heavens no.
Somebody may break a cycle. It's not going to be that guy.
Right.
No.
Surprise.
And then probably the most disturbing thing of the other of this entire episode happens next.
Mm-hmm.
When that guy confronts Jakar and says, "We have sacrificed. What have you sacrificed?" Here Jakar is standing there.
We suffered. Where were you? Oh,
scarred, beat up, with an eye ripped out of his head. And this guy has the audacity to ask Jakar. Yeah. And ask Jakar, "What have you sacrificed?" And Jakar just looks at him and just starts laughing and walks away.
Uh-huh.
Which was the perfect reaction.
Yeah. It's like you laugh or you punch him.
And, you know, at that point, I think I personally would have just said, "Fine, go right ahead." And I'd have just left the picture and been done with it. I mean, you know, it's a cycle that just never seems to end.
Uh-huh. Except, with the application of a strong will. And that's what Jakar's going to provide, except he's not going to do it from authority. He's going to do it by force of will, which we'll see as we progress.
Yeah.
This is the third time sight is mentioned. You know, it's in this exchange that with these guys that Jakar's, well, they say, "Well, you don't see. And he goes, "I see better than you imagine."
Yeah.
Well, if you go back to the beginning of the episode, when Londo comes in and sees Jakar for the first time missing an eye, and he says, well, I forget what Londo says, and Jakar's response is, I can see things now that were invisible to me before. In the context of this conversation about your eye. And then when Cartesia is sitting there ready to begin the pronouncements of judgment, and he says to all the people in the room, remember what you see here today, and talks about it being the stuff of legends, which, by the way, was incredibly either condescending or insecure. I thought maybe he was almost betraying some insecurity there when he's like, if he's the man that he is and the potential god and all that, and he's got to say, well, you need to watch what I'm doing because this is the stuff of legends. You shouldn't have to say that if it's true. It'll be obvious. And then we get this scene wasn't what he thought, but it was the stuff of legends. And then we have this sad exchange between Jakar and these guys who tell him that he doesn't see, and he goes, oh, I see better than you imagine, with that same eye missing.
Right.
And I don't know if that's just kind of some smooth writing, cool coincidence or what, but those scenes stood out to me in this episode each time about what people see. Twice, Jakar being half sightless, right? Losing half of his sight, but declaring he sees better. I see things that were invisible. I see better than you imagine. Wow. It's neat stuff, but
I don't believe it. I don't believe it was accidental. There's too many times that things like this coalesce for it to be accidental.
And like you said, Jim, and he walks away. He just walks away, laughing.
But he walks away, laughing, shaking his head.
Not gonna fight these guys. He's not gonna even argue with him. He's out.
Yep.
And from here we close. I just left it at, in our notes, the White Star 14 completes its mission.
Yeah, we get a blow-by-blow shakedown of what's going on.
And that's why it's called, this episode's called The Long Night. Because it certainly is. Now, the episodes up to this, either opening or closings, have been going through the different characters. At this point, we're now with Sheridan, the leader of all that's happening here. And this time, he closes the show. And Jim, we've played the others. Let's play his.
Captain's personal log. Final entry. We're going into the heart of the fire. On one side, the Vorlons. On the other, the shadows. And us in the middle. Whether any of us will ever come back, I don't know. When I took command of Babylon 5, I found a note on my desk. Someone had left it there for me. It was a poem by Tennyson. I still remember the last part of it. Though we are not now that strength which in old days moved earth and heaven, that which we are. One equal temper of heroic hearts, made weak by time and fate, but strong in will, to strive, to seek, to find, and not to yield.
And then the credits roll.
Yeah.
That's the end of the poem Ulysses.
Yes.
Not a very long poem. If people haven't read it, they ought to go find it. It's all over the internet in various places. It's a good little poem.
And it's very appropriate.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That was a long and powerful episode. Yeah. And when you watch it, it just seems to fly. It's like, oh my gosh, it's over already.
Yeah, it does.
Any final thoughts, gentlemen?
I think we can let that stand on its own.
Yeah, I think we've pretty well covered this.
I think that would be appropriate. I do want to just close with, Jim, do you know what our next episode is going to be?
I do. The sixth episode of season four, Into the Fire.
Yep.
The only thing we left off was out of the frying pan and into the
That's
fire.
That's right.
Though it does match up perfect that the title fits the closing monologue.
Yeah. So we're anticipating a big episode with huge amounts of boom.
Yep. Though I've got to ask, did we get some boom tonight?
Figurative boom. What do you think, JP?
I think Cartasia felt the boom.
Yeah, the boom dropped. Yeah.
The boom got lowered.
And I guess, Jim, you've already answered if we're going to have some boom tomorrow, haven't you?
We're going to make up for all the episodes that had no boom.
There you go.
Yep, because there's always boom tomorrow.
Always.
Good night, everyone.
Good night, y'all. Say good night, JP.
Good night, JP.
Podcast terminated. Thank you for listening to the Babylon Project podcast. You can email Raul and Jim at the Babylon Project podcast at gmail.com. You can find us on Facebook at the Babylon Project podcast. On the internet, we are at babylonprojectpodcast.wordpress.com. To subscribe to the podcast, you can find us on iTunes, or you can subscribe to the RSS feed on the webpage.